Before I get into the message, I wanted to, Veterans Day is Tuesday. I want to honor our men and women that have and are currently serving now. As a taxpayer, there are sometimes I'm really concerned about the way political winds blow. But the friends that I have that serve in our armed forces, I'm one happy taxpayer. I am grateful. I watch them. I see how they're dedicated to what they do. And while I wonder sometimes about political decisions that are made, I'm just grateful to know that our nation's security and pursuing the mission is in really good hands. So for those of you that have or currently serve, I'd like you to stand. We're going to pray for you. Some of you don't want to do that. I get it, and that's fine. But it's real easy to, we live in a culture that likes to criticize. And I think there are times what we really need to do is just express gratitude. So let me pray. God, it is way too easy for us to take for granted, especially in an affluent culture, things that we never should. The fact that we have the freedom to disagree and disagree publicly, that we have the privilege, responsibility to vote. There's so many things that we just day to day take for granted that have been provided for and protected for by men and women that serve in our armed forces. And for that, we're grateful. Forgive us for the times where we get lazy or where we feel like that our right to complain is more important than our right to express thanks. Pray for these that have and those that are serving and for their families, that you would give them strength and tenacity and integrity and courage. Help them to stay with it and to bring their absolute best to the work they have. And may we that are supported by them find creative and regular ways to say thank you. But for right now, we ask that you would protect them and care for them in Christ's name. Amen. Thank you all. I hadn't thought about it till early this morning, but Veterans Day and the topic we're looking at today, they really do kind of go hand in hand. And the thing about Veterans Day, it's really hard to not also think of Memorial Day, which is another time for those that lost their lives, but for a purpose that was worth it. Many people think that being part of a church, if we're really honest about it, it's kind of like being in a really nice club. You know, you give a little bit of time, a little bit of money, but you're expecting some benefits from it, and you're expecting some perks. And when you show up, you want to be treated like a member. That's the way a lot of churches operate. That's exactly the opposite of what Jesus views his church as. I think if you were talking to Jesus, you had lunch with him after this at Squisito's or somewhere, he said, so what do you think of your church? And one of the things I think he would say, he said, I think it has more in common with your military than it does your clubs. You know, the thing about our military service is people serve there to advance a cause at any cost. And I think he would say, that's really what my church should be about, is that you've bought into this cause that I've called you to, something you've tasted, something you understand, and you're fully committed to doing everything you can to make sure that it gets broadcast and understood and told everywhere possible. There's a difference between just having warm, fuzzy feelings and being fully devoted. And so today we're looking at this idea of the cost of going after the one. This series After the One is saying this is what we're supposed to be about. This is what church is. It's not just New Hope. And by the way, it's Jesus' church, not ours, so we really ought to go to him and find out what does he want his church to be like. There was a time Jesus was, and no one really got it at the time, they did later, but he said, I'm the good shepherd, and I'm going to lay my life down for the sheep. And they thought that all sounded really interesting and probably was just kind of, you know, Jesus telling one of his stories. They didn't realize that he was literally going to put himself in a place where he was going to be executed, not because they're bad guys after him, but because there was a penalty that needed to be paid. There was a cost to our sin, and he loved us enough to sacrifice his life so that we could have freedom if we chose it. So what I want to do today is talk about this cost, and I'm going to use two stories Jesus told. The first one is in Mark 8. You'll have it on the screen. And there's a take-home sheet that you can get after the service. If you're watching online, you can download the digital version, or we have them outside these side doors. But in Mark 8, Jesus, and my guess is that when Jesus started saying this, his PR team was saying, look, you better not go there. You're getting you'll understand in a minute. Because then calling the crowd to join his disciples, Jesus said, if any of you want to be my follower, and then he goes, it's going to be fun. It's going to be easy. You're going to have a blast. That's what the PR team wanted him to say. He avoided the teleprompter and said something else. He goes, if any of you wants to be my follower, you must give up your own way, take up your cross, and follow me. As soon as he said that, they knew what that meant. They were used to Roman executions. Jesus hadn't been killed yet, of course, but they were used to it. What the Romans would did, especially in the Jerusalem area, is they would have the one that was convicted to die carry the cross beam from the city to the outskirts of the city where they were going to put it, nail it to a post, and nail him to that to kill him. So taking up your cross meant it was humiliating. It was all designed to show that someone was hopeless and worthless. And yet Jesus is saying, I want you to take up your cross. And he'll explain. He goes, so if you want to be my follower, you must give up your own way, take up your cross and follow me. If you try to hang on to your life, you will lose it. But if you give up your life for my sake and for the sake of the good news, you will save it. And what do you benefit if you gain the whole world but lose your own soul? Is anything worth more than your soul? If anyone is ashamed of me and my message in these adulterous and sinful days, I thought we invented the adulterous and sinful days. Apparently they've been going on ever since we've been around. Ever since people have been around, there's this battle that goes on. If anyone is ashamed of me and my message in these adulterous and sinful days, the Son of Man will be ashamed of that person when he returns in the glory of his Father with the holy angels. Jesus is saying something that is, it bears staring at for a little bit. If you try to hang on to your life, you will lose it. But if you give up your life for my sake and for the sake of the good news, you will save it. To accept the gift Jesus offers, I must let go of everything else. He doesn't make it simple. He makes it simple to understand, but it is difficult when you get down to the really, what does it mean to give up everything else? When our daughter Sarah was about one, we lived in Fort Worth, Texas. And I was in the kitchen area. She was in the hallway and she wanted to come out and play with me. The problem is she was holding onto this toy, and I don't know what it was. It may have been one of those rocking horse jobs or whatever it was. It was too big to go. She couldn't carry it through the doorway. So here she is. She's holding onto that. She wants to come be with Dad, but she doesn't want to let go of that rocking horse thing. And it's just banging against the doorway. Now, if you knew my daughter, you'd know if she had a skill saw, she could have taken care of the problem pretty quickly. But the battle was, am I going to let go of this and go hang out with Dad, or is this more important? And what Jesus is saying, you can hang on, you can make your choice, but you can't have it both ways. You can't have this and me. I'm not, he doesn't play that game. And he wants it to be really clear for us. He wants us to know that if I'm going to follow him, that means I give up everything else to do that. There was a time, this is a bonus, you can look up in Matthew 19 or later in Mark 10, there was a guy that came up to Jesus. Guy was a wealthy, very influential leader. And he asked Jesus a real honest question. He goes, how do I know I have eternal life? Jesus, it said that Jesus looked at him and felt a lot of love for this guy. He liked him a lot, wanted the best for him. And he said, well, what about the commandments? Oh, I've obeyed all the Ten Commandments. Yeah, yeah. He was a real religious guy. And then Jesus said, oh, there's one thing. There's one thing what you need to do. I want you to sell everything you have and come follow me. Only time Jesus ever asked anyone to do that. So the guy heard him, listened to it, and then he turned away and he left sad because he was extremely wealthy and he wasn't willing to give it up. Jesus doesn't ask us, he's not looking to make us miserable. But in that case, he revealed what was most important to this guy, and that was the comfort and security and all that came with his wealth. And he understood the choice, and he decided, I can't give it up. He's like Sarah in the hallway. I'm not letting go of my horse. What's interesting about this, too, and I think you'll see this some in this message, we can talk about another time, is that God's not interested in my stuff. He just doesn't want to. He doesn't want there to be a competition between loyalties. And the truth is, if that guy had said, sure, I'll do that, Jesus might have said, that's all I wanted to know. You can keep your stuff, but from now on, you're managing it on my behalf. Because that's really, at the end of the day, what matters, isn't it? He's not looking for us all to be in poverty. He's looking for us to be completely sold out to him. And our time, our resources, abilities, all that kind of stuff, they now are at his disposal. And that raises another question that we see here, and that is, without good priorities, and really strong priorities, good values are kind of meaningless. I bet if I did a poll in here, we could come up with all kind of great values here. Family, God, you know, work country, caring for your neighbors. I mean, we got all kind of things. We're all saying these are great values. They're really, really good. The problem is when I don't prioritize them accurately or clearly, is that the good can be the enemy of a lot of other things. You know, I can say, you know, I think it's really important, this is a value. I think everybody that's able ought to work and contribute. I think it's really important. But you know, if that's my top value, my family's going to pay a high price for that. Family's a high value, but work's apparently a little bit more. I know when Becky and I were first married, I've always been in the physical fitness, and I was at the gym every day. And it cost, we paid a price. Part of it was just to get away from having to answer questions. And she had a lot of questions for me about stuff. I'm not, you know, did I just make you look bad? No, she wanted to, oh man, I got to go here. I just take a minute. No one would have ever accused me of being skilled in relationships. And if you're not skilled in relationships and get married, whoa, what? Oh, it was, and she always wanted to talk through and work through things, and I didn't. I fine was my favorite answer for most things. And I could say, I got to be at the gym because I got to take care of myself, you know. The thing is, those are, you can have all kind of values, but what's in first place? Is it finances? Is it work? Is it family? You know, you can put family in first place and really screw a lot of things up. You can create kids, if you're not careful, that are spoiled rotten because they think the whole world revolves around them. Let me see this. This is a picture from yesterday. We did a parent-child, or we call it a child dedication, but it was parents and their kids. And what the parents do when they come here is they're saying, look, I need help in raising our child. And our number one priority is going to be putting Jesus first. That's our top value, because if I put him first, I now have the perspective to have all these other values in their right place at the right time. It's like I've got true north, or I've got a foundation. And Jesus is saying, if I'm not number one, it doesn't count. You know, in family life, I'm a better husband because Jesus is my top priority. And one of the things he says is, you need to love your wife as I love the church. I'm a better dad. I'm a better worker. But it all has to come from that top priority. If I don't have the priority right, all these values are going to conflict and create all kind of problems along the way. When I choose Jesus as my first priority, I will discover my true purpose and potential. And if I don't, I'll never really know it. It's not just going through the motions. It's not just saying Jesus, thumbs up to Jesus. It's being fully devoted to him in all areas of my life. Perfectly, of course not, but progressively, yes. And this doesn't happen if I just dabble or periodically. You know, some of us are really good to reaching out to God when problems come. And even when something good happens, we'll say, yay, God, but then we go back to whatever we're doing because we're not really dependent on him. And what Jesus is saying, I want your full, undivided attention. When I choose Jesus as my first, my top priority, I'll discover my purpose and potential. And he gave an illustration of this, and I'm going to adjust it a tiny bit, not because I'm better than Jesus, but I think there are some things that you'll understand in a minute. Let me just read this. He took something that was very common in that culture. They were used to seeing fields of wheat. They understood what it was like to go and buy wheat and crush it and do all this to make bread. He says this. He goes, I tell you the truth, unless a kernel of wheat is planted in the soil and dies, it remains alone. But its death will produce many new kernels, a plentiful harvest of new lives. Those who love their life in this world will lose it. Those who care nothing for their life in this world will keep it for eternity. Anyone who wants to serve me must follow me, because my servants must be where I am, and the Father will honor anyone who serves me. We don't have a lot of wheat around here, but we do have a lot of acorns. We got a picture of acorns up here. I'm switching this around. I think if Jesus was here in Northern Virginia, he would say, unless an acorn falls near. If I'm wrong, don't stand next to me after the service. But I do think it. I think the illustration is what matters. And I want you, I was out in my yard yesterday, and I thought it was hailing. And it was nothing but acorns dropping. We've got a bunch of oak trees, and they were apparently spitting all over me because it was banging the car and the truck, and they were everywhere. And then to drive out of the driveway, you can't sneak out because it's just crunching acorns constantly. So I just want you to think about this for a minute. Think of this group of acorns. They're little nuts. I just had to say it. I did it at 9, and my daughter rolled her eyes because it was a dad joke. But let's imagine that there's this group of acorns, and one of them, I don't know which one, but one of them is Eddie the acorn. And all these acorns are kind of hanging out with each other, and they love their new life. They can roll anywhere they want as long as they avoid the squirrels. It's a good life. One day they hear the farmer coming, and they'd heard some stories about this farmer, and when an acorn fell into the farmer's hands, it just disappeared. And so they're all thinking, scram, we got to get out of here. We can't have that. So all the acorns just kind of roll under grass behind the trees and stuff. They're just getting away. Except Eddie. Eddie has a different view of the farmer, and not really sure why. He may have heard some stories, but he decides he's going to trust the farmer. The rest of them are like, Eddie, you're an idiot. Get out of there. Hide. But Eddie said, no, I'm going to hang out. So the farmer grabs Eddie, picks him up, stares at him, takes a little hat off, Then he takes a stick, punches a hole in the ground, tosses Eddie in the hole. And the rest of his acorn buddies are looking and saying, we knew this wasn't going to be good. And the next thing gets even worse because the farmer has got some sheep on the farm and he goes and picks up some sheep debris, what we call it, fertilizer. And he dumps some of that in the hole, a little bit more dirt, packs it, Eddie's gone, buried, out of sight, out of mind. And all his acorn buddies are looking, thinking, we knew it was not going to be good. This is really, really bad. We're going to roll out of here and hide. And again, no squirrels, good life. Periodically, they would come by and see where Eddie was buried. And they'd feel a little bit sorry for him, but then they'd kind of laugh and think, you know, what an idiot, you know. You know, look at us. I mean, we're getting a little wrinkly, but we're okay. But Eddie, bless his heart, he's gone. And they would do this regularly. They'd just come by and pay a little homage to Eddie and go on their merry way. This goes on for a while, and then one day they come by and they notice that where Eddie was buried, there's a little something coming up. It looks like a miniature tree. And they're not really sure what to make of that. They keep coming. They're getting a little bit more wrinkly as time goes on. That's what happens to acorns. But they're noticing that this tree is becoming bigger and bigger. And as time goes on, the tree looks like this. Have we got the oak tree? That came from one acorn. One Eddie. That single acorn, you know, the standard oak tree will produce somewhere around 2,000 acorns. In our yard, it's about 20,000 per tree, but we'll say 2,000. Every 5 to 7 years, they'll have a bumper crop, and they could have 10,000 acorns. From one acorn, you get all these other acorns. But it only happens if it's planted. And here's the thing with Eddie. Eddie would tell his story, and he'd go, look, you know, they stuck me in the hole. It was nasty. It smelled horrible. It was wet and cold and all that. And eventually, I just started cracking up. Things started really changing. Top, bottom, I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on. I don't know anything about it. All I know is the farmer knew what he was doing. And as time goes on, that acorn becomes a tree, which reproduces itself tens and tens of thousands of times over and over again. If you just looked at that group of acorns, you wouldn't have known what the potential was. But God does. God knows your potential completely. And the thing is we're used to living in a world where you got influencers and you got people that are very famous and all that kind of stuff. You know, in heaven, that's not what they write about. The thing God is interested in is us having an impact, an influence that helps shape people from the inside out. And there's some of you that are having a huge impact. You don't even realize it. You don't realize you're being watched. You don't realize that people are seeing how you make decisions or how you react or don't react to things, and they're saying, I want what they've got. When history wraps up and we're in heaven and we get a review, we're going to find some people that are huge celebrities because God celebrates the way they invested their lives. It's a choice each of us have. And I want to read this to you again from Mark 8. Jesus said this. He goes, if you try to hang on to your life, you will lose it. It's kind of like Eddie's buddies. They were acorns, they were free, they were independent, but they were starting to shrivel up, and eventually they just got hard, cracked, and split up and became soil amendments. If you try to hang on to your life, you'll lose it, but if you give up your life for my sake and for the sake of the good news, you will save it, and you will have an impact that will go way beyond anything you could imagine, because our God knows your purpose and your potential. Whether it's realized or not, has nothing to do with your education, has nothing to do with who you know and all that. It has to do with, have I surrendered my life to Jesus Christ or not? And the question comes back to is, what are you going to do? It's a choice every one of us get to make. What am I going to do with Jesus' invitation? He says, come follow me. He says, he'll be our shepherd. He'll be the one that takes our life as however it is. And he'll do something with it that no one could imagine apart from him. That rich young leader walked away because he just wasn't willing to give up control and comfort and convenience. What is it that holds you back? Yeah, I want to follow Jesus, but I really like hanging on to this. I like my career. I like the status. I like what I'm building toward. I like the stuff I've got. I'm afraid God might ask me to give some stuff away or to put me in a position or maybe a place to live that I don't really think I'd like very much. Kind of like Eddie in that hole. God knows what is absolute best for you and me. And he will never, ever lead us in a way that wouldn't ultimately be for our absolute best. The question is, am I going to trust him or not? Am I going to kind of dabble every once in a while with my faith? Or am I going to make this a real, genuine surrender to him? God, you can have your way with me. Another question would be, what is one thing you think God might be nudging you to do right now? And a step toward fully trusting and following him. There may be someone here, someone in the auditorium or watching online that's never made a commitment to follow Jesus. You've been holding back. You're not sure if you can trust him or not. What is it that would tip the scales for you? There's no one that's ever loved you more than him. He's provided that we could have all of our sin forgiven, past, present, and future. But it means I accept him. I have to let go of whatever I've got. I need to grab hold of him. What is it that holds me back? What would be that one thing I could do today that would be a step in a Godward direction? It may have to do with my time. It may have to do with my money. It may have to do with how I use my influence. It may have to do with kind of what I've set my hopes on. But what is it? And is there evidence to believe that he's good enough to handle all of that really, really well? Among all my values, if I make him my number one priority, is there reason for me to believe I could trust him and he would never rip me off? And I would say there is more than ample evidence for that. But the choice is still mine and yours. Let's pray. God, you know every one of us here. You know everything about us. You know the things that we're afraid of. You know the things that we're deeply committed to seeing happen. You know what we believe we're entitled to and what we deserve. And you see every bit of that, and yet you invite us into a relationship with you where we learn to follow, where you help us let go of those things that are holding us back. You help us to grab hold of you and to learn along the way those things about character and values and integrity and honor and how to be people made in your image that reflect your image. There's not a thing about us you're not aware of, and you know what's going to happen down the road. You know what could be accomplished through us, and you also know the things that could get in our way. And you are working regularly to help us to see how good you are. We actually get to see others and see when they make good choices and when they make poor ones. We can learn on their tuition. But we still have to make our choices and live with them. So for all of us today, I ask that you'd help us to honestly and humbly come to you and just say, God, what is it you want from me? And I will trust you and I'll follow. Where we're struggling with it, help us to be honest with you about that and to wrestle with it until we can come to that conclusion of, I'll take up my cross, I'll follow. Because I know the one I follow is good and not only has my best interest at heart, but he has the best interest of others that can be influenced through me. God, please speak to us. Help us to tune out all the other noise. For Jesus' sake, amen.